And one of the guests here at the con, who I happen to know, a rather famous person, was here, and I know their user ID. And it's scrolling up the screen, which you'll see later, and I see their user ID. And I went, holy crap, they just leaked your credentials. And this person should know better, right? And so I went to them and said, hey, come here, look at, is this you? And I went, oh my gosh! Well, they had just bought this new thing called an iPhone. They had just come out. This was a couple of years back. And the iPhone had this thing that would give you status of Twitter and Facebook automatically. It was built in. Everybody was like, ooh, I can tell if I've got an update on Twitter or Facebook. This is awesome. Yeah, the way it did that is it in the background, it constantly looked for open access points. And when it found one, it would connect and send in the clear your credentials to log into Facebook or Twitter. So you were basically wandering around broadcasting to anybody who had an ear your credentials. Yeah, that was bad. And so he immediately turned that function off and changed his password. So, yeah, people do this all the time. So, assuming this works, oh, please work. Oh, damn. Yeah, we'll have to hook that up and see. Let me grab my phone back here. Okay, well, here's the whole point of this is, even if there is an open access point, and even if I'm doing evil on it, so, hey, Jim, what's up? This is Jim, everybody. No, because in our excitement, we forgot to turn the power strip on, and the stupid thing shut down. Yeah, we're pros, yeah. Oh yeah, I'm not afraid to admit I didn't turn on the power strip. That's just so embarrassing. It's not the worst thing I've ever done. The worst is when I... The worst is when I killed a... I used to do surveillance for the military, and we're not recording it. No, you're messing with me. Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. Is that better? Okay.
That's not better?
Okay. Oh. They heard that. I used to street perform. I could talk so they could hear me in the Marriott. So I can do that if need be. Let me know. If you can't hear me, let me know. I can talk much louder. I used to do surveillance. I was on submarines during the Cold War, and you've probably heard of that. How many of you speak Russian or glow in the dark? Okay, you're welcome. And we used to do a lot of this stuff, and the idea was you never knew we were there watching you. That was the whole point. So a lot of the stuff that I do now is based on the idea of, hey, why can't I do that now? I don't need a $30 billion submarine to do it with. I can just build it out of an old cast-off laptop that I got at work. So that's what we did. Where's motherfucker? Okay, here's the way this thing basically works. I need another command. There's a slide, by the way, these slides, what I recommend, you can furiously scribble everything I tell you, or the easy thing is wait till the slide where you get more information and the URL's there, just go there and you can download the entire presentation. So, and the website, which is up and has zero content, will have additional information that's not currently on my Georgia Tech website. So, what we do basically is sniff the network passively. Okay, I did that. Okay. So, IP. What we're doing now, what time, we got 15 minutes. Okay. I just got to make sure this is going to work. What I did is I just took, this is my wireless adapter, right? It's like a $30, this happens to be, for anybody who's into 802.11g, this is like the best hacker tool ever, and it's like $30. And this is really fun. This is my directional antenna. Remember I said off the shelf, you print this on your printer. Yeah. So, when I say off the shelf, I really mean off the shelf. I don't want to spend any money doing this. Now, you see what we got here? Okay, what I did is I told my wireless card to go and scan and tell me what he sees. So this is all the access points here at the hotel that I can see. And it gives me a lot of information about them, as you can see. Okay, now the one we're looking for is this one here in this room. So, that one. And we're going to need two bits of information. We're going to need his MAC address and his channel. Now, his channel, which you look right here, is 11. Okay? So we'll open up the window here. Now, I'm doing this to make sure that it's going to work when we actually demo what it's going to do. Because when it does it for real, it's really cool as hell. Okay. Yeah, that's actually a zero. Okay. Now, what we have to do is put the interface in monitor mode. Now, not all adapters will support monitor mode. This particular one does. In fact, the one that's built into the laptop does not, which is why I'm using this. So this tells it, hey, create a monitor mode interface. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. And this, yeah. Not really. When you're in monitor mode, you are essentially on wireless. You are promiscuous, and this is something that when we actually do this thing here, I won't go into because gets too deep. But when right now, I could take that monitor interface. In fact, if I do and see down here at the bottom, there's mon zero right there. Okay, I could point tools at that right now and start snatching everything that the wireless access, everything that adapter hears, everything, it'll start snatching it right out of the air. And it'll hop around channels. Now, I can set it to a specific channel, in which case it'll give me all the traffic on that channel for all clients and all access points. There's only one tiny little problem when you do that. In fact, it stymied me for a while trying to figure out how to get around it. And it was kind of like realizing there's no spell checker in Microsoft Word. And you're like really pissed off and you can't figure it out. So you go to the forums at Microsoft and you post and say, where the hell's the spell checker? And everybody says, yeah, really, where's the spell checker? Look at this thread over here. Everybody complaining about no spell checker. And so you search and you search and there's no answer. No one has an answer. And so one day you stumble across this post where a guy's talking about adding words to the custom dictionary. And you go, custom dictionary? So you start searching on dictionary and Word and there's all this stuff about how to use the spell checker. And somehow, those two groups on the same forum never managed to talk to each other. This actually happened with this problem. The issue is, on a wired network, you have Ethernet packets. It's got data and it's got header. Now imagine if you took your mail program and gave it the packets directly. It would go, what the hell do you want me to do with that? You have seven layers of the IP stack that it pops out as a message to the application layer, pops out as a message to the email. If you gave the packets to it, the program looks like he has no idea what to do with it. Well, that's the problem here. When you go to radio, they add another header called the radio tap header that facilitates communications of the radios just like the Ethernet packet does between the network layer, right? Well, that's the problem. None of the tools know what to do with the radio tap header, with the exception of Wireshark. Wireshark does know how to interpret them. But when you use Wireshark to do this kind of work, all the data is there, but it's like trying to read your email using Wireshark looking at packet flows. Okay, it's really painful. We want something better than that. We have lots of really cool tools for that, like EtherCAP. But the problem is, there's the radio tap header. So how do you get rid of the radio tap header? It turns out you have to create a device tunnel. And I thought, oh, great, I'm going to have to write a driver. There goes my off-the-shelf attack. So it turns out that part of the AirCrack suite is a tool called AirTun-NG. Guess what it does? So that's what we're going to do. We're going to create, we've put it in monitor mode, okay? So now what we're going to do, we go back here, remember our MAC address, right? Now this is where it gets a little funnier. If we do our MAC address, we create a tunnel. Let's see, AirTun-NG. Okay, now what this is going to create is a tunnel on monitor zero, and by default it automatically increments the tunnel so you can have more than one. So this is what allows you to listen to all the traffic if you wanted to. Now, I could, if you want to do this live, which is what we're doing. If you don't want to do this live, you want to analyze it offline, you can actually just capture everything to a PCAP file and filter it at your heart's content. When you do it that way, you get all the traffic for everybody. When you do it this way, you only get the one access point you're talking to. So it gets a little more complicated. Now, you can have multiple adapters and tell each one to listen to somebody else and then aggregate it in the back end, which is what I did. So anyway, we create the tunnel, assuming I typed that correctly. Good, it worked. Okay. Now, once I create the tunnel, most of the tools do not care if the tunnel has an IP address. How many have heard of FireSheet? Wow, a lot of you. That's unusual. FireSheet insists on an IP address for the interface, so we give it one. And then we have to turn the interface. This is the tunnel interface, so we're going to turn that on. Link set. Dev. Well, how are we on time? Oh, we got a few minutes here. Set dev AT0 up. Okay, and this turns the interface on. So now the interface is on. So should we try to capture something with it? Okay. EtherCAP. EtherCAP's a really cool tool. It does have a bug, by the way, which will bite you. I'll show it to you. It's really kind of cool. Okay. EtherCAP is now on, listening to that interface. Now, this guy is on, attached to this wireless access point this guy's listening to. And what I'm going to do, this laptop, I have a test page that takes clear text logins over Georgia Tech. It doesn't actually log into anything. It doesn't matter what credentials you put in. It won't let you into anything because there's no actual account there. But it's great for testing. So if this works, oh, yeah. The demo guides have cursed me today. We had it running last night. No, nobody was here last night. Okay. Oh, this really sucks, man. Yeah. I was running this all day yesterday. It worked great. Where's Scott? Hey, Scott, can you make sure we're actually on G? Currently, my adapter only does G, so I've never actually tested this on N yet. All I can show you some traffic we actually did capture last night. Okay, this is two tests we did, a couple of tests we did last night. We left it running with the power strip turned off. We were hoping to catch a bunch more stuff. And I've also got Fire Sheep on here, and I was going to, obviously it's not capturing anything for some bizarro reason, because the demo gods hate me. That's why. They hate everyone. We are going to be running this all weekend, so. The what? Chronal mass ejection. Actually, I have a true story about that. We were at sea. I can't tell you where, but we were at sea, and the navigation satellite just vanished. This is pre-GPS. It's the system before GPS. It's gone. So they come to me and they said, hey, you got to fix this. And it wasn't even my system, which I didn't understand, but they wanted me to fix it. So I looked at it, and I said, well, the receivers can receive down to a minus 120 dB, which is pretty much you can hear an ant fart in Antarctica from here. I mean, it's really down in the noise. This, everything's working perfectly. There's no satellite. And so communication officer, he's like, you gotta do something, gotta do something. So I said, well, there's nothing I can do. So he goes to the operations officer, who's an idiot, who comes down and says, I want you, could dirt in a connector cause this problem? Yeah, so could elves if they came out in the middle of the night and messed with the system, right? But he says, I want you to take apart every connector. Now, remember, we're at sea on a submarine. So, yeah. Oh, okay, sure. Oh, really? Oh, okay. That would help. I would love that if it would start working. That would just make my day. So, So what ended up happening was he wanted me to take apart all the connectors. Now, I happen to know that once you take the connectors apart, which the system is already certified and all the working, the chances of actually introducing a problem were pretty much 100%. And so I delayed, and he says, so finally he comes in and he says, look, you really got to do something about this. And I'm thinking, oh, man. Well, I remembered in training, one of the things they said, which Jim pointed out, was not smoke signals. I just saw what looked like smoke over there. Solar flares and sunspots can disrupt communications. And I remember seeing a message come across saying there's high sunspot activity. You might have disruption of communications. One of the communications that came across the wire that nobody paid any attention to, and I just happened to have seen it. And I said, oh, I know what it is. It's sunspot activity. It's taking out the satellite. He's like, that's bullshit. Take apart the connectors. And so I'm like, I'm really trying to stall, you know, and I'm getting to the point where they're going to put me on report if I don't take apart the connectors. When we get a message in that says, the satellite's gone due to sunspot activity. So I immediately pulled it off the teletype, if you remember what those are. I pulled it off the teletype. I run down the hallway. Woo! Hey, dude! In your face, man! So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. So yes, sunspot activity took out the satellites. Oh, we do? Hey, it could be that. It could be a stray neutron from Mars. Yeah, I think you're right. Whoops, wrong plug. Okay, we might as well get started here. Now that I've demonstrated that it doesn't work, I guess it's going to completely undermine my presentation, right? Hopefully it's still capturing, so hopefully it'll get something here. By the way, for those who don't know, are we on time? Yeah. Welcome to DragonCon. Yay! To make sure we get people get on the wrong tracks every once in a while, this is the Harry Potter / fiction track. If you are in the wrong room, too bad. We're not letting you out. We have guards on the door. So, my name is Keith Watson, and this is my friend who I just met, Eric.
Eric Thompson. I'm a Wi-Fi engineer with Cisco Systems.
And he's here to, I had this point on my slide, which sounded really, really cool. It is really cool. Unfortunately, I don't, other than a couple of articles on the internet, I didn't really, and then Eric happens to call out of the blue saying, hey, I saw your panel. I'd really like to talk on that panel. I said, well, what do you do? And he's implementing what my slide talks about. So we can actually ask him about why it's so evil. So this will be really fun. Okay. Oh, trust me.
Oh, we know we're evil. We're just happy being evil.
Yeah.
And to talk about your sunspot activity, there's actually an official TAC document on binary cosmic events that details how cosmic radiation can cause a single bit on a wire to flip and crash your router. Go out there and search for it. I can't actually give it to you because they'll get mad, but it's out there on the public domain.
So I'm Keith Watson. I'm the Information Security Manager at the College of Computing, where we essentially ride herd on about 20,000 wannabe Uber hackers, and the Chinese and the Brazilians and the Germans. Okay, so what we're going to be talking about today is Wi-Fi surveillance. Now, most of you use Wi-Fi, but you don't really think of it in terms of surveillance. By the way, anybody recognize that picture? No? That is a meeting with the director of the CIA and President Ford. Who was the director of the CIA? Bush, you're right. That's Bush, and he has hair. But they're having a meeting. So we're talking about Wi-Fi surveillance, what is possible to hear, and most importantly, is it legal to do it? So if any of you run out of here going, woohoo, that looks simple, I want to try that, I'm going to give you a few caveats and warnings, because it really sucks because I'm out of bail money. I'm not going to come bail you out, okay? And we'll demonstrate how NarcNet does not work, because it just failed. Oh, gosh. We'll talk about some legal warnings about the issue of using this. And why is this such a big deal now? In other words, this has been around a long time, wireless network. In fact, I'm going to show you a chart that says it's not a big deal, and then I'm going to say why it's becoming a big deal. And most importantly, how to keep from being owned by people like me or somebody else who's out to do evil. And at the end of the slide is every link you would ever want to know on this subject that you can go get. And also a link, you can write down the link of where to go get more information. By the way, you can go to narcnet.com. The website's empty right now, but it will have content here hopefully this weekend. It's NARC.com. Everybody said, why didn't you use NARC? Because a NARC is a narcotics agent. For those of you who actually grew up in the 60s, of course, if you actually remember the 60s, you weren't really there. But but NARC with a K is a British slang term for stool pigeon. So it's a stool pigeon net. So what is Wi-Fi surveillance? It's very simple. It's listening to Wi-Fi communications to collect information. It's not just listening to Wi-Fi. Obviously, your laptop does that all the time, your cell phones, everything else. It's for the purposes of collecting information. Now, normally, attacks are active. You do a man in the middle, you do an ARP cache poisoning, or you do an evil twin. The last conference I was at had an open wireless access point. It was like a facility like, well, kind of like this, where they had their own access. And we had our convention access. We had our own access point like we do here. The thing is, the convention site had their own open wireless. Here, it's not open. So I know that anybody who wants open access is going to go to mine. I'm going to get their traffic, right? But there, I had no guarantee of that. And I wanted to pretty much make sure. So what I did is I built a wireless network and did an evil twin attack on their network. And since I knew the software used to control their back-end system, I was able to make their router turn its power down automatically. And so the only thing they could hear was me. And then I tap the uplink. But that's kind of cheating. I mean, if I'm going to do that at Starbucks, that's kind of cheating, right? What you want to do is you want to do it from a couple of miles away, completely passively, so they can't see you coming, right? So that's the whole idea. The process of doing this, by the way, is called SIGINT, or signals intelligence, which we talked about earlier when it wasn't on being recorded. So now, what can you hear? Pretty much any unencrypted traffic that comes across a Wi-Fi from whatever device you have, laptops, cell phones, any kind of device you have that uses Wi-Fi, a lot of them will automatically collect open access points. In fact, we're going to talk about how cell phones are becoming a big issue right now. There's all kinds of things, email, social networking, your login credentials. Did I bring these slides? I have slides from other conferences that show all the login credentials we have. In fact, we've caught them here. We're going to do it over the weekend. We'll catch some, so come back and see them. Session cookies. Now, what session cookies are good for is a thing called sidejacking. If I can capture your cookie, I can take over your social networking page. Did you get that? Yeah, that means, by the way, if you really tick off your neighbor, what kind of pictures do you think he's going to post on your Facebook page? Yeah, that would be, if you're a teacher, game over, man. I don't care if it turns out that the cops eventually figure out it was your neighbor. Good luck with that. But if they do, the bell's been rung, dude. They're never unringing that. Okay. Voice over IP calls. The phone companies are desperately trying to get the traffic down on their network. So what they're doing is they're having these services now where they'll give you special rates if you let it automatically connect to local, any open access point it can find and offload the traffic to Wi-Fi in the network to do voice over IP. That's unencrypted. We'll get into the consequences of that here shortly. Now, is it legal to do this? Sort of. The Wiretap Act says it's not illegal. You know, it's not illegal. No, it's legal. Oh, you're right. That's a double negative. Thank you. Thank you, Jim. That's why I keep you around. Jim's on the science track. We go back a long ways, by the way. I got to fix that. It's legal. The Wiretap Act says it's legal, and it's for a very simple reason. Anything you broadcast in the clear, unencrypted, that's not on a legally protected channel. There are some channels that are legally protected. You're not allowed to own a radio on that channel, that sort of thing. Unless it's specifically protected, you broadcast in the clear and somebody overhears it, too bad. That's your fault. Okay? That's always been the rule. The FCC has always held that rule. If it's encrypted and you crack the encryption, anything like that, that's considered using excessive force, essentially, and they can bust you for that. But if it's unencrypted, too bad. It's on the person who transmitted it. It's the equivalent of you're in the hallway and you overhear some personal information in a conversation next to you. You're not supposed to stick your fingers in your ears. It's stupid for them to talk about it in public, right? Now, unfortunately, there's been some recent court cases that disagree. There is this little company you may have heard of called Google. And they have these little cars that drive around and map things, apparently. And they, in the process, they hired this guy to do some stuff who built NetStumbler, probably heard of that war driving app. And they were kind of surprised to find out that he was doing full packet captures of any wireless access point he happened to drive by. And they didn't know that this guy was going to do that. I'm so amazed. He built NetStumbler. Come on. So they got caught. Yeah. Yeah, that he's talking about war driving. Where did you say it was? Yeah, University of Pittsburgh. Yeah, you'll see these chalk markings on the sidewalks or on things or on walls. Those are actually symbols talking about. By the way, they are recording this, so it sounds like I'm talking to some disembodied spirit or something. Yeah, talk to the. He'll give you the mic. That's war driving marks that tell you where the open Wi-Fi access points are. So as you're walking along, you just see where they are, right? A judge ruled against Google saying that because they had to use specialized equipment, a sniffer, that it was considered above the ordinary. In other words, it took special effort and therefore it should be considered private communications, and ruled against Google and fined the crap out of them. Now, Google, of course, contested it. Now, that was in 2011. In 2012, another federal judge said, no, are you idiots, man? This is open communications. The Wiretap Act says very clearly it's not protected. And the FCC weighed in and absolved, since they actually own the problem, they absolved Google of all fault. Now, the Germans, they don't have this law. They busted them. They get paid a big fine. And there's still this big thing. Now, really, they didn't do anything illegal, but how many think it was just really rude? Yeah, see, it was a public relations nightmare. They didn't do anything illegally, but yeah, people thought it was kind of creepy.
Well, okay. The trouble actually came in on that was that Google took that information, data mined it, and sold it for marketing purposes. So they made about $16 million off of one day's capture, is what the lawsuit actually said. So that's where that came in. We got.
Yeah, I hadn't actually read that part. That's kind of cool. And by the way, that's legal. They didn't do anything illegal, but it's really people. I mean, my mom doesn't understand. She just thinks it's creepy. Okay. Now, so here you have the problem. Courts, and by the way, all these blue things are actual links you can go to that are articles. Now, the actual URL for the articles are at the end of this presentation. So if for some reason you can't click on this because you don't have the right version of PowerPoint or something, you can actually go get the URL at the end. So they're not hidden anywhere. So you have courts disagreeing over whether it's legal or illegal. Now, what that means to you is this. If you get caught doing this and somebody decides to prosecute you because they don't know the law, all bets are off. And eventually, you might get cleared after spending a lot of money in legal fees. You really don't want to do that. Okay? So if you ever do this, make sure you have permission of the people that you have the wireless. Like, I have permission to do this here. It's part of the demo. But if you do this for real and get caught, there's no telling what's going to happen. In fact, for a while, we were thinking of not doing these presentations anymore because of that. Now, NarcNet demonstrates this. And as you saw how epically it failed, for those of you who weren't here when we turned it on. I don't know why, because it was working great last night. I wanted it off the shelf, meaning you don't have to write any code. You type in some command line stuff from a script, or you know, make yourself a little bash script and run it. That this does not require any kind of Uber hacking skills. You don't have to be a programmer. If you can, how many people can download an ISO and burn a DVD? Everybody. Your kids can do it, for those of us with the gray hair, okay? Your kids can do this if you don't know how. By the way, while they're at it, have them set the clock in the microwave. So you can download this, and as long as you have the right wireless adapter, which a lot of them do support monitor mode. In fact, most of them now in laptops do. Some of the older laptops, like this one. This one I got when I got my Abacus. It does not support monitor mode. And you can also sniff WEP, because if you know the key, which you can crack easily with the AirCrack suite, which is what you're using to do the tunneling, you can crack the WEP code, and with the WEP code, you can then sniff all the traffic just as easily. Okay? Now, so what, right? Well, here's the cool part. It's completely undetectable. There is no way. How many people think they know what station you're listening to on the radio? Anybody? I get this at conferences, people, yeah, but they know when you're tuned to rate. No, that the way they do those ratings is they actually sign you up and you keep a record of what you listen to, or they give you a special radio that records what channels you're listening to and when. There is no way to detect what channel you're tuned to on a TV or radio unless you tell them by some either technology or you actually tell them and write down a log. So it's completely undetectable. The record distance between two access points is now, by the way, I looked it up. It was 237 miles by the Italians. Guys built a leaning tower. Apparently, they can do some things right. There were some other guys that did it. It's 260 miles, and it bounced it off like a balloon or a satellite or something. So you can do it from a long ways away. They're never going to see you coming, right? You're not going to be sitting out in a van in front. You're not going to be sitting at the table with this. You know, for those who don't know, this is your home-built directional. This is an 11 dB gain. That's a lot. Every 3 dB is double the power. This is an 11 dB gain printed on my printer. That's tinfoil glued to the back of cardstock. You download. This is called freeantennas.com. You can download the PDF and scale it up or down to whatever size. I have a little one that's about this big. Hey, if you want to pass it around, here. There you go.
It's not a good airplane. It's a terrible airplane.
By the way, the instructions say it takes 10 minutes to make. The first one took me less than 10 minutes. I thought, oh, they're crazy. 10 minutes? No, it really did. It took me less than 10 minutes. It was really kind of cool. Now, what's neat is you can do it live, which is what we're trying to do here, or you can actually just capture all the packets into a PCAP file and mine through them later. Okay? The advantage of doing it live is you need to do it live if you want to do sidejacking and take over somebody's Facebook account or something like that. By the way, I'll warn you about this later. If you ever decide to demonstrate this, do not do it on somebody else's Facebook page. Use your own. I created an anonymous one just for the purposes of doing these demos, because when you click on the little icon on somebody else's, it's a felony. Okay, just so you know. You have been warned. Okay, now this is the set of commands. Now you see how complicated this is. This is like rocket science here. There we go. Okay, first thing we do is we bring up our wireless link, which we did earlier here. And then we tell it to scan, and it puts out a list. I'll show you here in a second. It puts out a list of all the access points, and you're going to look for two bits of information, their MAC address and the channel they're on. Okay? You then turn off the interface. By the way, on the website, there's going to be a complete set of very detailed instructions on how to do this, so you don't need to scribble all this down. Then you set the channel that you want to listen to. Okay? I left out that step. That might explain why that didn't work. Hey, we'll try it again. While I'm talking, I'm going to... Oh, cool. I'm going to restart it. We'll try that again. That might. So then you tell it what channel to listen to, and then you create a monitor interface. Now the monitor interface is very similar to promiscuous mode. So now we brought up our wireless LAN access. We said, hey, go tell me who's out there, and he tells me everybody's out there. I pick the target. I turn off my interface. I set the card to a specific channel. That I want to monitor based on the information I got back when I scanned. I then put it in monitor mode, which is kind of like promiscuous mode. So now everything, if I were to attach something there, I'd see all the traffic on that channel, everything, but with all the radio tap headers. If you're using Wireshark, that's great, but if you want to use any other tools, you're going to need to get rid of the radio tap header. The way we do that is we create a tunnel. That's this right here at the bottom. This AirTun says, take that MAC address and create a tunnel on Mon 0. This one, I don't know exactly what that does yet, but everything I've read where people are doing this say, yeah, you got to put one there. It doesn't work. Wow, that was helpful. I think I'm going to have to go through the source code and figure out what the hell it's doing. Now, once you do that, your tools will start working. This will create an interface called AT0. You see it up here, AT0. Let me log in here. Okay, it creates an interface called AT0. Now, most tools don't care if the interface has an IP address or not. So EtherCAP doesn't care. However, tools like FireSheep do. So what you do is you assign an IP address to AT0. Now you notice that's not a real IP address. That's a local machine address. It doesn't have to actually go anywhere. It just needs an IP address that's valid. So we give it a loopback address. And then you bring up the tunnel, just like you would start up any other network interface. And then you start sniffing on that interface. And presto, you have been pwned. Now let's... Y'all want to see this, if it'll work this time? Okay, if this works, wow. No hugs. Okay. I know you're excited. I know it's the first day. The caffeine hasn't worn off yet. Now, this should... Please, network gods. Oh. Might help if I turned on the interface. Yes! Okay, something worked today. Okay, now I just wrote a script that does all that fun stuff for me. Okay, now that did all the commands and created my AT0. And now...
You remember sending the channel this time?
Yeah, it's on channel 2. Now, okay, now we are actually listening we're doing everything I just said. Okay, now this guy, this machine here, is actually on that network, and I'm now going to go to a page. Oh, please work. This would be awesome if it. If... Actually, I don't have a connection. What the hell? Oh, there he is. Oh, that's right. He reset it. That's. Oh, DHCP request. That's me. Ah, it's capturing. Yay. Okay. That was this machine associating with the access point. So there's the DHCP request. And I'm getting an IP address. It's saying, yay, you have an IP address. Aren't you happy? There we go. We're capturing. That's my script posting. Let me kill that. Okay. Now, just to prove it's actually capturing, come on, wake up machine. Okay, what would you like me to say? What's your name? Rachel. Okay, hi Rachel.
Hi.
Now Rachel, do we know each other?
Nope.
Aren't you glad? Yeah, okay.
Maybe.
This is DragonCon, there's some weird stuff. Let's see if it catches this. Actually, there's something wrong with
it. There it goes.
There it goes. Okay. Hi, Rachel. Okay.
Hi.
Now, you notice these guys aren't connected in any way. This guy is actually on the... Thank you, Rachel, for volunteering like you had a choice. Okay. This guy is transmitting. Gosh, I'm so glad that worked. Now, what I did is I actually normally... Let's actually start this the normal way. Okay, now this is, yeah. I changed this command to where I actually have to give it an interface now, so it'll do multiple interfaces. And, okay, what I've done is I've done a little work on the back end. I'm now writing all this to a file, and we're going to parse as, come on, little laptop, you can do it. This is like ancient hardware. This sucker's at least 5 or 6 years old. So, oh, in computer terms, he's like a dog. He's well past his age. So, what I did... I wrote to a file. Let's see if it captures any... There it goes. Okay. What I'm doing is this is how we display when we're at a conference. What we did is we simply took the EtherCAP output data and we sent it to syslog. Now the reason we did syslog is syslog allows us to get past a race condition of multiple apps trying to talk to the same file. We talked to syslog, we let it log to the log file, and then I have a PHP script which I got off the net. Notice I didn't have to write any code. Thank you, Iron Geek, wherever you are. If any of you guys know Adrian, cool guy. I took that code, I pointed at the file, it does this. Now, you notice over here, there's stars with a password. Oop, wrong mouse. There's stars where the password is. That's because there was no password, okay? But if I actually put in a password, you'll notice it'll put like about the first three characters. Come on. Hello. Or not. There it goes. Okay. Notice it put the... wrong mouse again. It put the first three characters there. Now, it used to be, when we first started doing this, we left it completely open, and somebody said, hey, look, there's some innocent people here. That's not cool at a conference. You know, anybody could write their stuff down. I said, yeah, that's... You're right. So we made it all stars. And then I was doing this conference, and this is sad, with teachers. And the CIO is standing next to me for the school district. And this teacher comes up and says, hey, is that my account? I said, yes. He said, did you get my password? I said, yes. He said, right there? I said, yes. He said, that's not my password. I said, yeah, I got your password. It's covered up with stars. So no, you know, I don't want to give it to the audience. He said, no, there's no stars in my password. Okay. Typey type. So I unmasked it. There's his password. Oh, you have my password. Should I change it? Yes. Why? Are you going to use it? No, I don't care about your account. But the 14-year-old out here with the same CD I have is doing the same thing I'm doing, and he has your password, and you don't know it. So yes, you need to change your password and stop using an open protocol, like now. And he's like, oh, okay, and he leaves. Now, I'm thinking, oh, after this conversation, this guy's pretty humiliated right in front of a crowd, right? And I'm thinking the CIO is going to chew my butt. She leans over and says, thank you. That guy's a major pain in the ass. He thinks he knows everything about computers, and he doesn't. Yes. So, okay. So, now, you've seen it work. Now, mind you, we are doing, here's some caveats. This is an 802.11g network. We are not doing N. I haven't got N working yet because I just haven't had enough research time to mess with it. So, cancel that. Okay. There we go. So, that, now, is that kind of scary? I mean, how many of you think your next door neighbor kid can do this? Yeah, pretty much. Because all of you are thinking, hell, I could even do that. I know the kid who could set the clock on the microwave can do this, right? So here's the legal warnings. I can't see what I'm posting here. Where's my, there it is. Okay, here's the legal warnings. You can violate laws and policies either at companies or locations that you're at that you're not aware of, okay? Now, since I work at Georgia Tech and I give presentations like this at Georgia Tech, yeah, it violates our network usage policy. Even though I'm going to get dispensation to do a live demo at Tech on this, we have to get dispensation in advance so I don't get fired. That would kind of suck. Honor code, if you're a student, Board of Regents policy. It also violates the State of Georgia Computer Systems Protection Act. That one and the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act and Electronic Communications Privacy Act and the Wiretap Act, once you do something with the credentials you've captured, that's when you get into trouble. So when you click on the icon in FireSheep and it opens up the Facebook page, that's where you get into trouble. Use your account. Or if somebody comes up and you know that that's their account and they say, is that really mine? Yes, it is. Yeah, okay, that's fine. I know that's them. But if you don't have permission, don't do it. Unless you want to go to jail. Or you're a bad guy, you know, and then you don't care, right? Okay, now, why is it such a big issue? Now, this is the really, really important part, and that's why we're going to have Eric here expound wax eloquently on this. There is massive growth coming in open Wi-Fi. Now, y'all notice this little, okay, that's a little weird. I have a completely different slide than you have. There, that's much better. Okay, you notice this little chart right here that you can't see the pink? Right here, there's this pink that goes like this and drops way down here. That line that goes down like that, that's open Wi-Fi. This is an actual chart. If you click on it, it'll take you to the source. This actual chart shows that this is encrypted Wi-Fi going up, and this is open Wi-Fi going down. Well, that's because for a long time, all the access points you got at home, they were open by default. Okay, and if they gave you tools to make them encrypted, but they were kind of hard to use and nasty, and so most people didn't. So they got on it, and they came up with this little button on the front. You push the button, and it sets it up, and then you can get stuff. You go to the web page and put in a USB key, and it loads stuff in the USB key. You run around all your systems and click on the thing, and it configures it, and your mom could do it, more or less. So what happens is more and more access points by default are now encrypted. That's good. Yay. Okay. Unfortunately, there's a vulnerability in that little protocol that makes it trivial. There's an off-the-shelf product that'll allow you to crack that and get their key and just access your stuff anyway. So, although most people aren't going to bother, it's kind of like, do you know one of the biggest deterrents for people kicking in your, like, carport door or your door in your house? Other than a giant wire, is a screen door. It doesn't even have to be locked. Apparently, there's something, I got this from a police training thing I went to, that from the burglary division. Apparently, the guys don't like holding the door open, even though it's got the little thingy to hold it open. They don't like holding it open while they kick your door. What the hell? Okay, So what do you think is going to happen if you used encryption, even though it's easily crackable? They're going to go to the guy who doesn't, because there's 40 people around you who don't. And here's the real killer. Right now, there are enough open wireless access points, even though they're going down. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. Okay. It's really trivial to find them. Okay. However, everywhere you go, it's now a competitive thing. You go to coffee shops, stores, grocery stores, you go everywhere, they have open wireless. Why? Because people come, they hang out, they use the wireless, and they continue shopping and buying more coffee and doing things. Or they bring their friends there and hang out and aggregate, and it becomes like the little, you know, hangout place. People buy more stuff. They tell their friends about it. They like it. It's very nice. So they make more money, and they have to do it. Even though it's a loss to run the infrastructure, they don't gain anything by running the infrastructure. They have to do it because all the competitors are doing it. Here's the weird thing. How many people have gone to a coffee shop because they have open wireless and didn't use it? Yeah. You go, oh, that's a nice place. See, they have open wireless. They're friendly. I'm not going to use it today, but I'm going anyway. Yeah. It's some people, for those in the audio audience, several people raise their hands. Okay. That's one thing. Hotels. See those two bumps on the ceiling right up there? Those are probably the new wireless access points for the building. Okay. Now that's going to tie into what Eric's going to expound eloquently on. I certainly hope so. He did on the phone anyway. Now there's some initiatives coming. One is the phone companies are wanting to offload a lot of traffic. So they're automatically, oh, thank you. Ah. For those in the audio audience, he just gave us a clock to tell us when we got to get the hell off the stage. Okay, so they're offloading traffic onto the wireless networks, and they're doing this automatically. They give you a break on your rate if you do this. Unfortunately, when they do this, they don't encrypt the voice over IP traffic. Now, here's an interesting thing. There was a recent case, which we'll cite here in a little bit, where they put a GPS tracker in somebody's vehicle, and he got busted for drugs. But they didn't have a warrant. The court threw it out because they considered it an illegal search to actually stick a GPS tracker on his vehicle. However, when they had a similar case where they used cell phone records to determine track where they were off a cell phone tower. In fact, I was a juror on a murder case where they used cell phone records. It was the first time ever here in the state of Georgia where they determined that cell phone records, he was in the vicinity of his wife's house when he claimed he was someplace else when she was murdered. Ex-wife, I might add. He was convicted unanimously on the first vote. It was amazing. The guy was so guilty, it wasn't funny. They're offloading. This traffic is considered a business record. Business records, the only certification the law enforcement has to do is say, this is part of an ongoing investigation. No warrant required. They get business records, call records, all that stuff, including voice over IP traffic, because it's business record now. That's the danger of this, okay?
Right now, the FBI actively engages in that tactic with 7 major carriers in the United States. Cell phone, voice over IP records are not protected against wiretap warrants at all. They do it daily.
See, it's not just my opinion. Thank you. I love having experts. It's amazing. Now, here's some initiatives that y'all probably have heard of. And Eric is the actual guy who's building what I'm about to tell you. Facebook. Oh, by the way, anybody see this little map right here? This is all the access points around the Hilton. This is wiggle.net. You can go in and it says, hey, here's all the access points right here in Atlanta. There they are. Little spots all over the place. If you click on that, it'll actually take you there. Thank you. Oh, mine broke. And what happens is the battery's always on, so it runs dead in minutes. It's a purple. Ooh. Oh, yeah, that's much better. Thanks. This is all the open access. This is all the access points here downtown Atlanta, right around the Hilton here. I just went and pulled the map up. Okay. This is war driving. Where was he? He was sitting over here. He was talking about war driving. Okay. So Facebook wants to, if you have a Facebook account, an added benefit is they want you to be able to get open Wi-Fi so you can check your Facebook. So they're contracting with companies to piggyback on their open Wi-Fi. Well, who are all these mystery people? Well, you've probably seen the AT&T Wi-Fi open access points. They're all over the place. There's only one problem with those. They advertise their name. Now, who's the guy with the pineapple? Where are you back there? Who's back there? There was a guy with a thing called a Wi-Fi pineapple. You set it to advertise as AT&T. They connect to you instead. Yeah. There's a list. He's got a list right there of all that that we can see right here in the building. So that's one of the incentives they're doing right now to draw more people. Now, who's building the Wi-Fi access points? You've probably heard, there's a little company here in Atlanta. Some of you may have heard of them. They're called Comcast. And they have this new initiative called the Cable Wi-Fi, or no, sorry, Comcast Wi-Fi Neighborhood Initiative. It's actually a subset of this. This, the Cable Wi-Fi Internet Access thing, is what Eric's building. And this initiative, and Xfinity Wi-Fi is their website for it, this initiative, what they're doing is when you now get Comcast service and they give you your little modem box, it comes with free access points. So you get free wireless at your house. You don't have to buy your own wireless access point. Isn't that cool? That's kind of cool. Added bonus. What they don't tell you is there's a second radio in the box that creates an open public access point. Now, mind you, it's not on your network. It's its own network. It's separate from you. But it was sort of. By that I mean, well, actually, I'll let him explain that. it's technically not on your network except for this tiny little flaw that allows it to be on your network, and they can see your traffic. But other than that, it's not supposed to. It's not supposed to. Let me put it that way. So what this does is, the idea is, if you're a Comcast customer and anywhere you go, if there's a Comcast access point, it's going to allow you to access open wireless as a benefit of being a Comcast customer. Kind of cool, right? That's that Xfinity Wi-Fi thing down there. That's kind of cool, but it's open. And guess what you log in with? Your Comcast customer account. Isn't that special? Yeah. Hopefully that's over an encrypted channel.
It's probably the same account that you log into their streaming anywhere video site and can buy the $14.95 adult movies and watch them anywhere you want to now. So I do what he does, and then I can watch all the free porn I want
on your account. Your time. Oh, I. Hey, can I get the Discovery Channel that way? I'm not into the porn, but I Discovery Channel that or History Channel.
That'd be we had a guy in New York where I'm working now buy roughly $25,000 worth over 6 months of pornography, which he then burnt to CD and tried to sell on the street corners of New York on 5 different accounts for a cable company up there. And I'm thinking to myself, going, it took him 6 months to call in. But they did.
And by the way, if you're not a Comcast customer, it allows you to connect as a guest. And Eric was telling me, and some of them let you connect for a period of time and then kick you off. You have to reconnect, and others recognize your MAC address, and then you're allowed to connect so many times in a period of time and get free internet access. And after that, you actually have to sign up for an account. It depends on how they implemented it. Tell us about this initiative, this one here, this Cable Wi-Fi Internet Access Initiative.
Yeah, the Cable Wi-Fi Consortium is where all the Bright House, Cox, Comcast, Cablevision, even small MSOs, multi-offering service providers, came together and said, you carry my SSID, I'll carry yours, and we'll tie it together in the back end so that all your guys can work together. And we're going to carry a common SSID called Cable Wi-Fi that any of our clients can automatically log into, and there's some tie-ins on the back end. So technically, anywhere this consortium exists, you should be able to log in or get access to. Now, each provider offers a certain amount of free usage a day per device. But the catch to that is that the login gives you a false sense of security. It's all open Wi-Fi. The login is a web page login on a product called either BroadHop or Single Digits, which is a subscriber management system on the back end. So you're free and clear all the way till you get there, and then it does dynamic access lists, effectively what it does. And it says, okay, this guy's allowed to log in, and he can get so much through, and they have a QoS policy attached, and that determines how much data and what data rate you can get. That's what I work on every day. I'm deploying roughly, at one client alone, anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 APs outdoor a week. At another client that we're ramping up, that's going to be nearly 10,000. Combine outdoor and indoor. we do, you can't walk from one of the Vegas Strip to the other without and lose Wi-Fi anymore. Because one of the major chains there employed us, and we can go through. You can get start at one end of the strip, walk all the way to their hotels, indoor and out, and we can track you down using location services down to a 3-meter radius of where you are at any point in time. And then we take that information and we use it to turn around and say, here's how you monetize a free system. You go to the stores around there and you go, I can tell you how well your display is working by how many people stop and look at it. I can tell you how many people like, which restaurant's popular, but what the density of the cell phone is. And then we even take that another step. We actually do analytics on the Twitter and Facebook feeds to say, here's where they're made, because all those feeds are geotagged. And they're tagged with not only your lat and long, they're tagged with what SSID you were attached to, what your IP address was, and what account you came in on. All that is passed in the clear. So now I know your Facebook account is Bob1. I know Bob1 instead of Twitter with these light alongs at this time. I know exactly where you were because he wasn't at home.
Yeah, and it's bad enough that the companies have this. So can your neighbor.
Well, actually, it's actually worse for the companies because they're out there actively trying to make money off of it. Your neighbors, they're going, what can I embarrass him with? What can I use for revenge eventually?
There's a panel on that, by the way. Is it today? Revenge? Yeah, it's today. About what to do once you get this kind of data.
If I could borrow the thing, I'll show you how fast this one client is growing. Oh.
Oh, there you go. We got plenty of cable. Yeah, we just got to make sure we have enough time to go over.
Of course. This is actually the AP stability chart. You guys probably aren't really interested in that one. Here is the growth. This is for this year. We went from, I can't even see it from here, but we've added about 30,000 APs this year total. This is the public side of the house. The private side of the house, it takes about 4 months after we hang an AP, which becomes active in servicing clients the minute it gets power because we have mesh backhaul. And the mesh backhaul is another fallacy we'll get into a later date. So we hang these. It takes about 4 months for it actually to come online. We're hanging anywhere, like I said, from 1,000 to 1,500 a week coming up. The number of clients that you have, as you can see here, those are active sessions. That's live data as of about 15 minutes ago. And you can see the patterns today. We'll have 160,000 people on a single subnet. And yes, our subnets were that big for, thanks to marketing and claiming that you can roam without renewing your IP address from one end of Long Island to the other. don't you love it when marketing makes engineering decisions? So we on Long Island, you can literally start at the eastern tip in the Hamptons, and you can drive to New York City. You can turn either right or left. And if you turn right, you can go all the way to Boston. And if you turn left, you can go all the way almost to D.C. And at the end of the year, you'll be able to go south of D.C. without ever renewing an IP address. Because we have coverage, Wi-Fi coverage, that good. You can take a voice over IP phone and have a conversation the whole way. And every step of the way, the government can listen in.
Yeah, you're worried about the NSA having a tap into the phone company? When every neighbor you have or anybody that you know could be doing the same thing they're doing with off-the-shelf hardware. Okay.
Now, you'll hear them say, oh, we don't permit peer-to-peer connectivity. That's a fallacy because all these modern-day APs are controlled from a controller environment. You have a little box that sits at a head end. The AP forms basically a VPN tunnel between itself and this box, and it takes all the traffic, and it tags it with what SSID it comes on, and it sends it down to the controller, and the controller puts it out on the right VLAN at that point. The controller says, oh, I'm not going to let people talk to each other because all the client traffic comes all the way up to the controller before it's processed. So if you're on the same controller, no, you can't talk to each other. Controllers can control anywhere from 50 to the most that's out there right now is about 10,000 APs per box. I've got 100,000. That means I have a minimum of 10 boxes. Actually, I run about 300.
So you can talk between controllers.
But you can talk between controllers because traffic between clients. So a controller doesn't know, oh, you're on this other controller. You're a wired client. You're valid traffic going out. So, old Linux guys, what happens when you ping the broadcast address?
Everybody responds.
So you get all these guys back. All of a sudden, you know, everybody who's not on your controller on your subnet. And now I can do active stuff, or better yet, now I'm passive. I know what to go look for. Because the APs next to each other don't necessarily have to be on the same controller.
Oh, that's evil. So now, here's what this means in layman's term. It went from fishing for, you know, hunting fish in a barrel with a rifle to hunting fish in a barrel with a hand grenade. Okay, it's going to make it painfully easy to do this sort of thing. Now,
here you go. One last thing. Here's the map of Long Island. Every blue dot you see is a minimum of 10 APs.
Holy crap.
The single APs don't show up on this because the dots are just too
small. Yeah, for those of you not here, there's a lot of dots, so it's solid blue. Okay, just so you know.
The red dots are, that's for one cable provider. The red dots are for the other cable providers they're partnered with that are carrying their SSID.
Okay, now.
And it's all open.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, I don't know. That's scary or great at the same time. Yeah.
Go ahead. Because service providers are providing this at a free service, and they're lazy and cheap. They don't want to pay for you calling in going, I can't get this working, so they make it the easiest for you to connect possible, which is open, and they don't have to support you at that point.
Yeah, they don't want grandma calling sex support.
No, because they do it all through a subscriber-based service on the back end that can be accessed by any of their partners, and therefore they don't have to force anything on their partners to do anything.
Let me get through the protection thing and then come back to that. I want to make sure we're running out of time. I want to make sure we tell you how to keep from getting pwned. Okay. Now, here's the thing. How many of you ever just gone in a browser, gone up to the thing and typed in Facebook, hit enter? Right. It auto completes. What it does is that's not a fully qualified URL. It says there's about, by default, Windows recognizes about 70 protocols. That's the HTTP part. And then it has to guess. Did you mean .com? Were you talking about port 80? You know, you can do telnet over a browser. You know, it doesn't know. So it has to guess. So if you type in White House and hit enter, you're going to go to httpwhitehouse.com. Oh, yeah. For those in the audio audience, there's a lot of chuckling. That is one of the most notorious porn sites on the internet that was eventually taken down because people wanted to go to the whitehouse.gov. And they went to this porn site. The one that gets me is the one where you misspell Disney and it takes you to a porn site. It's like, really? 6-year-olds have money to spend on your porn site? What was the motivation there? I don't get that. So always use a fully qualified URL. That's what bookmarks are made for. There's also another very big reason we'll get into. Always use HTTPS. That includes not just the login, but the session as well. If the session's not encrypted, all those private photos you thought you were posting to something like Flickr or Facebook or whatever, I could snag all those images out of the air. Hey. Huh? Well, yeah, sort of. It's good enough that 99% of the people, you're still not going to stop the Uber hackers, but all the rest of us, it'll stop, right? Now, here's the problem, though. If you still have a bookmark that's HTTP, Facebook recently turned on, by default for everybody, HTTPS, the session, not just the login, but the session. That's good. But if you happen to have a session running and you accidentally close the tab and you go back to your bookmark and open the tab back up and the bookmark you used was HTTP, what happens is when your browser connects, they didn't set the secure flag in the cookie, so it broadcasts the cookie over HTTP before it transitions back to HTTPS, and bam, I now have your session anyway over HTTPS. Okay? I tested this with my account just the other day. My account, not your account. Okay? Just so you know. If anybody's listening out there is going to come looking for me. Okay. So you can be susceptible to browser autocompletion. That's one. So this is public key cryptography. This is Alice and Bob. Okay? Just so you know. And this is the public key cryptography handshake. This is the Diffie-Hellman key exchange. Equals armored truck, you're secure. So use HTTPS. Now the question is, how do you make sure you're using HTTPS? Okay. Facebook, configure this setting. Browse Facebook on a secure connection, HTTPS when possible. Supposedly this has been rolled out by default, but I'm still catching sessions that are still unencrypted. So go turn this on. Even though it's supposed to be on, it may not be rolled out to you yet. Change your bookmarks to be HTTPS bookmarks instead of HTTP. Gmail, it's been pretty much since they demonstrated side-jacking, since they demonstrated that, Gmail jumped all over this. They do a pretty good job of it. If you go to their, it's really funny, when you go to your settings, this setting is there and it's disabled, but your session's still HTTPS. Go figure. I don't understand that. Turn it on anyway. In fact, they recommend you turn it on anyway. Okay? Twitter is HTTPS. It used to have an option to turn it on. They took the option away. You don't get an option to use anything but HTTPS. However, this still holds true for them. If you go to the clear text link, while it transitions you to HTTPS, you can get sidetracked. The key is turning on the session, the secure cookie flag, which I'll tell you how to get around if they didn't do that. The downside is if their site isn't designed to have the secure cookie flag on, it can break some apps. So CowClicker and Farmville may break under Facebook or something. But at least they can't own your account, okay? LinkedIn had some of the worst security ever. I mean, ever, okay? They recently went to HTTPS. Go turn that on in your account. It's not on by default. Now, those are just the big ones. I'm sure there's lots of other, what's that other one that everybody used to use? MySpace. I don't know if MySpace has a setting or not. You need to check. Every service you use, you need to go check, especially if you're using wireless. Now, what about wired? We'll get into that. What if you're on a wired network? Now, here's how you protect yourself when they don't do it for you. Firefox. Has all these cool add-ons. Chrome is starting to get some of these add-ons. So eventually I hope that Chrome will catch up because it's kind of a cool browser with some of the add-ons that allow me to do the same thing, but currently not quite. These secure cookie attribute and the HTTP only attribute. Secure cookie says the browser itself will enforce that it will not send the cookie over an insecure connection. So even if you happen to go to HTTP accidentally, it will refuse to send the cookie until it gets a secure connection. But if they don't set that at the server, you can set it in using these tools, NoScript and HTTPS everywhere. Those can actually set that flag on for you and force it on. Okay? The HTTP only, that says that the cookie will only be divulged over an HTTP connection, which means a tab with JavaScript running in another tab can't look across to the other tab session and ask for the cookie from that session because it's not via HTTP. So you can't have some malware or something, some other fishy website, pardon the pun, going and snagging all the cookies of any other windows that they can see, which they do, by the way, for some of the ad tracking. So if you turn that on, that doesn't work anymore. Now, if you want to see all this cool stuff in the background, go get this tool called Firebug, and you can look at all the stuff they're doing. You can see what the status of all the cookies are. You can see what all the flags are that are set for your cookies, all your session data. These are all the flags that have to be technically set correctly in your cookie for everything to work. These, domain and path and expire and max age, are set by the server. You can't do anything with those. You can turn on these two yourself. Okay? These are controlled by how they actually put their website together. And more often than not, they're not set correctly, and it makes them susceptible to some types of cross-site scripting and some other things. Now, what about using a VPN? Okay. A VPN would solve the problem of me listening to the wireless network. It's an encrypted tunnel. I can't hear anything, right? However, that traffic pops back out on a network somewhere. And that every ISP connection it goes through till it gets to the server, if there's some nutcase working as a sysadmin there, he can sniff the traffic. That doesn't mean they do, but they can, okay? You know, hey, Google sniffed all the wireless traffic. You never know. You'd think they wouldn't do something like that, but sometimes they do. So the trick is just, even if you use a VPN, which is a good thing to do, because it puts the endpoint hopefully in a secure location, but you don't know, for instance, when I VPN into work, it puts me in my network in my closet. I'm not going through any other ISPs before I get there. So that actually makes it secure. But if you use a public VPN that pops out in Germany, from Germany to wherever you're going is now susceptible to being sniffed off the wire. So if you do this with using HTTPS, you've now secured yourself regardless of whether you're wired, you're wireless, it's open, it's not open, it doesn't matter. And use a VPN. So it's like belt and suspenders and a guard dog, you know. So VPNs work. They just don't make you ultimately as secure as you think you would be. Now, where can you get this presentation? If you go to narknet.com, that page has got a completely default page that says narknet. That's all it says on it. Okay. I haven't put any content there yet. It will be there. However, this is my site at Georgia Tech. The content, this whole presentation, everything is there, and there'll be additional stuff at narknet.com. Keep checking. Yeah, and we'll make it available on the panel page as well. All this stuff is available. In fact, a very detailed explanation of exactly how I got this demo running. So if you want to try this on your network at home, everybody's getting rid of their 802.11g routers to get in. And so I've been picking them up off FreeCycle and people giving them away. But friends call me, hey, I got this old computer in the router. Do you want it? Sure, I'll take it. And I build all this stuff. So people ask, I must have really cool hardware to play with at work to experiment on this stuff. No, I use all the crap that everybody throws out at the curb. This was going to surplus. And I got six more just like it. It's awesome. This dies, I pull one out of the box. It's really awesome. So you can get some really, really cool hardware for doing this. Now, Tech, obviously, I'm doing this for Georgia Tech, so I'm using their hardware, but you can get stuff like this too. It's out there. So anyway, go there. You can get this. And, of course, everything after this is all the links. You can see there's a gazillion of them. There's like 40 pages here. So anyway, now, questions. I know you had one. What was your question?
The traffic going, when you're talking about setting up these access points for the different cable providers, the traffic going from your client to their login processing server, whatever, is that default 80 or is that 443?
It intercepts both.
Okay.
We do an intercept on the first line side of life.
Okay.
Sorry. We do an intercept on the first line of life on any traffic coming into the network. And we convert that and convert it to 80 and send it to the subscriber management system login based off of the IP address you got from the DHCP server telling us what subnet you're on. So therefore, that's how we can tell what subscriber management system to send it to.
Okay.
And by the way, that's all done in the clear also, unfortunately.
Any other questions? Yeah, right there.
Which one?
There's two. There's him and the guy over there.
So, Eric, the concentrators or the connectors that they're using on this open Wi-Fi, is that where they're tapping right now, or are they tapping further upstream? So that peer-to-peer that you were talking about, was that getting monitored?
Those are connected to the same switch, and the switch switches like it should. So the monitoring, if we're doing it, is done there. But we're catching people doing broadcast pings and then doing exactly what he's talking about doing on a more aggressive scale for particular people. The government can either come to us directly and ask us as a part of an ongoing investigation, but they've discovered they don't have to. They do pretty much what he's talking about doing with some specialized equipment out in the field. And what we're getting requests for now is because with an outdoor AP, I have about basically an 1,800-foot range from the AP. I'm putting them every 300 feet on strand along the side of the road. So I have a lot of overlap. With one AP that's stuck way off at the strand by its end, I can tell you're within 1,800 feet of it. With two, I'm down to about 400 feet. With three, I can get you within a 10 to 12 foot area. So they're coming to us, and we're doing that for marketing purposes again, because now we're selling a shim that goes, that you, we give you a shim that says, here's how you find an AP. Not hard to do, but you know, we want you to know how to find an AP, so load our shim. I now know what AP you're talking to. The simplest form of location, I know what AP you're on. I go to the bar in that area and say, I'll advertise on my shim for anybody who comes in the area that connects to any of these APs. You walk in and an ad pops up, go to O'Doul's for the evening 5% discount because you walked onto that AP. What happens for the government, they come back and say, tell us where he was, and we can either give him a list of APs or we can actually come down to geospatial coordinates. We can get that detailed depending on what they ask for. So, and that's all done from a subscriber base because they come to us and they've gotten a phone tap. They know what phone you have. They can get your MAC address of your phone off the radio of your phone. They come and say, we just need to know where this MAC address was. And now we can do the, here's their trap for the day on APs they were just APs they were associated with. So now I can actually build an area where he could possibly have been during that day, and that's usually all they need.
What you're looking at here, by the way, this laptop has no connection to the network other than the wireless that I'm sniffing. In order for this to actually pull up the accounts, as you notice, this is FireSheet, by the way, and what I'm doing is doing session hijacking, and when I logged in to Facebook on this machine, it, of course, was encrypted by default, right? So I then went up and typed in http://facebook, hit enter. For a brief instant, it transcended my cookie because the secure cookie flag wasn't on, and bang, nabbed me, okay? Now, normally, if I were to click on this, it would open up this page here. Now, you notice it says, I can't find the server Reddit. Hey, that's actually not me. I'm not on Reddit. We caught somebody else. Haha. Okay, this is me. Now, normally it would have my picture there and information about you, but because to do that, I need an uplink. So if I were actually doing this hack for real, say you're sitting at a location, you know, a mile away from the local coffee shop, I would have my uplink would allow me to then sidejack their account because people say, well, why don't they just lock it to an IP address? You really can't lock it to an IP address because of ephemeral IP addresses. And so they have to assume that they can't tell if you're hopping around or not with your account. So they just don't filter on based on IP. So it'll happily let me connect. And what would happen is you would actually see my Facebook page would actually show up right here if I had an actual uplink.
Or Reddit.
Or Reddit. Actually, that's not... Oh, we got... There's another one. Reddit. Whoever Reddit is... Hey, maybe we should... Well, we're over time, actually. I know everybody gets mad if we run too long because then they can't get to their next session. So are there any other questions? You had one?
So I was just wondering if I've got a broadband router through Time Warner Cable in Brooklyn. I had them put it into bridge mode. Does it still have this other Wi-Fi still enabled, or do you know that?
It depends on the model. I'll talk about that real quick. What they did is they initially deployed a home router that had two APs built into it. But what connected everything was just a simple dumb hub. And oh yeah, and on the router side they used ACLs to protect you because they had two. One AP had one IP range, the other side had the other IP range. Even though they were on the same broadcast domain, they couldn't be routed together. So they used an ACL to connect them. They have gone back, and on the new model they actually have a switch, and it's supposed to be VLAN. The only trouble with the switch is that it has a conniption every now and then and defaults everything back to VLAN 1. So, depending on the model, we bought Scientific Atlantic. They're a good company. They weren't network engineers. They were, ooh, we can do this, people. Not, ooh, should we do this, people. So.
Well, thank you all for coming, and have fun at Dragon Con. By the way, it's good to eat and sleep occasionally, just so you know.